I have a fascination with, and maybe even a mild obsession with, people who can go deep in a particular area. Often we might consider these people to be very gifted in their area of expertise, or even really geniuses in their field. And in an intellectual sense, we might think of someone who's an academic mathematician or a scientist who spends hours in deep thought, asking questions and running experiments, trying to answer these deep questions. I've also had the privilege to know some theologians and philosophers who have the ability to really go deep at the heart of a question, whether that's about God or something on the natural level. They really have the ability to go and get at the essence of something and spend a lot of time trying to ponder that particular question that they might have. But even in the practical arts, we might think of someone who's a farmer, who knows the times and the seasons and the type of seeds they can plant in the land and the amount of knowledge that is needed to really know something. Or someone who's a car mechanic, who knows the different parts of an engine and knows when something breaks down, that how to fix something. But they have to know that particular thing really well. You can even think of, and this is probably on a lot of people's minds today, is you think of someone who's like an elite quarterback in the NFL, like Patrick Mahomes, who has the ability to be able to read the field, who knows the game really well, who has just an intuitive sense of things that comes from study and hard work and just that deep knowledge. And hopefully what all these examples illustrate is that the point is that we as humans can develop a depth of knowledge about things, whether that's in an intellectual sense or on a very practical level. And either way, whatever area it is, we need to go deep in those particular areas to really understand them. In fact, we're called to live a deep life in whatever area the Lord is calling us to do that. And that depth also extends not just to intellectual and practical arts, but it also goes into the spiritual life, a life of prayer, a depth that I don't think we always try to reach. Or we think it's for those spiritual elite figures. You know, it's for those people that are in monasteries or for great saints that we read about, which is not true, by the way. It's not just for those people, but we have this ability to be able to inculcate that attitude within ourselves, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, that, well, that deep life of prayer, that's really not for me. It can really take us away and believe that we're not called to a life of holiness. And yet, Jesus challenges us to go into the deep. We meet Jesus in our gospel while he's being pressed by the crowds. He's been teaching them. And as he's standing by Lake Gennesaret, he sees the disciples washing their nets, and Jesus gets into their boat. Now notice that he doesn't ask to get into their boat. He just gets into their boat, and they're a short distance from the shore, and as they're fishing, and then Jesus is also teaching, he then tells Simon Peter to put out into the deep water and lower their nets for a catch. Now, we have to remember that these are professional fishermen. They knew where to cast their nets. They knew this probably better than really anybody else, and so they might be a little perplexed by this. It also could be that it's about afternoon. It's not typically a time you go out into the deep water to catch fish. But yet, out of obedience, even though he's a little reluctant, Simon does this. Even though he tells him, well, we've been fishing all night, we haven't caught anything, but at your command, we'll go ahead and lower the nets. And after they do this, they make such a great catch that their nets begin to tear and their boats begin to sink because they have so many fish. And then after this happens, Simon Peter then kneels down in front of Jesus and says, "Depart from me, Lord, for I am a sinful man." We also have to notice here that the vocabulary of how they address Jesus changes. It starts off with "Master" at the beginning of the gospel and then changes to "Lord." Because there's a sense of recognition here that there's something more going on with Jesus. Peter has this great astonishment, and the other apostles in the boat also have this great astonishment, this kind of holy fear of what has just happened, that truly God has been speaking to them through this event. And what we see in their reaction, especially in Simon Peter's reaction, is a chasm between the universal call to holiness, that call to a deeper spiritual life, and also, on the other side, the fact that we feel unworthy to go deeper into that spiritual life because of our sinfulness. In fact, all of three of our readings, if we look at them, all point this out. The prophet Isaiah fears his unclean lips, and in fact, the unclean lips of the people around him. And yet the Lord is able to heal him by touching his lips and removing that wickedness and sin from his life before sending him out. St. Paul tells us that the Lord appeared to almost everybody else before he appeared to him, because he was so unworthy. He considered himself to be the least worthy, the least of the apostles. And yet, in all three cases, whether it's in the prophet Isaiah, in St. Paul, St. Peter, the Lord knew that they were sinners. He knew that they were unworthy. And yet, he healed them by his grace and then sent them out to be able to proclaim the gospel, to fulfill the mission that they were called to. And they all knew that they needed the Lord's grace to do this. Jesus knew that the apostles needed this grace. And that's why he tells them not to be afraid, even though they have this great fear initially, because their mission is going to be transformed. They're going to be going from being fishermen to being fishers of men, to lead others to Christ. And truth be told, we are all probably afraid of our weaknesses, our sinfulness, our unworthiness, our inability. But the Lord has the power to come into our lives and heal us, and even use our vulnerabilities. In fact, our vulnerabilities can actually be some of our greatest strengths, to really lead other people to Christ, to draw others to himself. The Lord can use that. But what often prevents us from really going deeper into the spiritual life is a fear of failure. It's a fear that, well, if I just try to pray more, I might do it for a little while, maybe a brief period, but after doing that, I'll just quit, I'll get discouraged, so why even bother? Or we might feel called to do a particular ministry in the church, but we just don't see that we have the strength to do it. And we can think, well, there's lots of other people out there who can do that just as well as I can. I don't understand why the Lord is calling me to do that particular ministry. But in both cases, those are lies. They're lies that don't come from God. They come from the evil one to discourage us. Because the evil one doesn't want us to go deep in the spiritual life. He doesn't want us to pursue calls in ministry. He doesn't want us to go out into the deep. He wants us to stay in the shallow end of the water. But what we have to recognize is that the Lord is not going to give us a call without giving us the sufficient grace to do it. Let me say that again. The Lord is not going to give us a call and not give us the sufficient grace to do it. He will give us that strength. He will help us. And even if we stumble and fall, even if we feel like we fail initially, or we're not doing it as well as we should be, and the apostles, as we know throughout the Gospels, fail all the time, yet they simply turn back to the Lord, and that's what we're called to do, turn back to the Lord and ask for his help, acknowledging that he has a plan, that he's still using us. And yeah, we have to put a little bit of work into it. St. Paul tells us that he toiled harder than everyone else, and you see that throughout his letters, of what he's telling people to do and rebuking people, and also all the different things that he did throughout his ministry. But he notes at the end of the day, through all those things, that it's still the grace of God. Even though he did all this work, it's still the grace of God that is helping him to do all of these things. And that's also what all the saints in the church understood. They knew that, yes, they were great sinners. Yes, there was a great chasm between them and God. But acknowledging that chasm, acknowledging that difference, allowed for them to be open to God's grace. Because the more that we acknowledge, and this is the great paradox, the more we acknowledge that we are weak, the more we acknowledge that we're vulnerable, the more we acknowledge that we need help, this opens our heart in humility to receive God's grace, to allow the Lord to work. In fact, the Lord really won't start working until we do that. Once he does that, he'll actually give us a great abundance. Our nets will also start to tear. Our boats will also start to sink because the Lord is going to fill them up with the things that he wants us to do. So as we approach the Lord's grace in our holy altar this morning in the Holy Eucharist, we should ask the question, what is preventing us? What obstacle is preventing us from going out into the deep water? And let's hear the Lord tell us not to be afraid of whatever that is, and let his grace transform us.